From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The Belgian newspaper Dernier Heure reported Thursday that alleged Brussels suicide bombers Khalid and Ibrahim El Bakraoui were planning attacks on Belgian nuclear power stations and that the arrest of Paris attacker Salah Abdeslam accelerated the plans of those alleged terrorists. According to the report, the brothers had planted a hidden camera in front of the home of the director of the Belgian nuclear research program. The report also said that authorities claim evidence they obtained indicates that the same terrorist cell behind this week's Brussels bombings was behind the Paris attacks in November, which claimed at least 130 lives. In the aftermath of the latest attacks, there were serious concerns expressed about the dangers facing immigrant communities in Belgium and across Europe. For more on that, we spoke with Sukant Chandon from the London-based group Sons of Malcolm via Skype Tuesday.
What kind of work are you doing in and around London, or do you see needs to be done in the aftermath of this, which is, again, going to bring another response from both the dominant culture and the state?
Well, quite, you know, our struggle is globalized. So whatever happens in one place affects other places. And, you know, when there's a terrorist attack in the West generally, or in West Europe, if it, you know, when Paris happened, it had a direct impact on Islamophobia and anti-Muslim hate crime and racism in general in the UK. So in the aftermath of these things, it's really important that communities bandy together, look out for each other very vigilantly. And I mean, in public, you look out for each other, particularly our sisters with any kind of head cover. We need to look out for each other. If anyone is aggressed, we need to literally stand shoulder to shoulder physically. I'm not saying people throw punches, but sometimes we need to throw punches as well. I'm not going to shy away from that. If our sisters are physically attacked, we need to defend them. And so I think it's a case of defending each other and also publicizing and making sure the authorities and advocacy organizations are developing the casework when we are victims, which we will be increased. It will spike after this when we're victims of our race hate crimes.
And I want to explore a little more the idea that the oppression of these communities, in, you know, basically the desperation that exists in many of these communities across Europe, is you know, being farmed, or in any event, is available to be farmed by people like Wahhabists.
Yeah. I think there's one important thing I'd like to state just before I make the other substantive contribution to your question, brother, is that it's not a simple case that people are oppressed and exploited, put into ghettos, and then they somehow automatically are open to joining Al-Qaeda and Arab Peninsula or Nusra or Daesh. It doesn't quite work like that.
Agreed.
Yeah. And myself and Dan Glazebrook and Saqib Deshmukh, there's only two or three of us who have campaigned for the last 5 years against what was known as collusion in the British colonialism's activities in the occupied six counties in Ireland. It's basically how the British state and as the United States state had colluded with and collaborated with death squads in Latin America, Ireland, and now the Muslim world. So it's all been facilitated. Now, the Belgian authorities may not have as good a military intelligence community and capacity as, for example, the United States or the United Kingdom. So, you know, some people could perhaps, you know, slip through their fingers, etc. But I think we have to be a little bit honest and just understand that, you know, Belgium is a very small country. Brussels is a population of 1 million. You know, when you're in Brussels, it's, you know, you quickly know communities very well. You can walk around Brussels. You don't need to catch a bus. It's a very small place. And I'm very surprised if the military intelligence organizations of Belgium, in coordination, which they have been with France and probably other European Union countries, are not very well aware of the machinations and movements and organization of the supremacist death squads known as Daesh or Al-Qaeda in Arab Peninsula and Nusra within their own communities. I think they are aware of it. And also, as I referenced before, Belgium facilitated, as is the UK and France. It was under their watch that hundreds, if not thousands, of young people have left West Europe to join Daesh and to fight in Syria and Iraq and other countries. So the collusion has to be kind of zoned into and understood and popularized. Very few people are working on this issue. But at the same time, yes, if you've got no prospects of employment, if you're humiliated on a daily basis in life, which young people are in Belgium much more than in London. London is like a, you know, it's like we're liberated here compared to Belgium. Belgium's a horrific place when it comes to racism. You know, the cops will openly call you monkeys on the street, you know, if you're North African or African. So if you've got no prospects, if you're humiliated, if you're living in a ghetto, then these guys come along, you know. I mean, if you're living in Tunisia or anywhere in the global south in our homelands, you know, you got no money. But then these guys say, look, you get a couple of $100 every month. You can have all the loot, all the women to sexually assault that you like. You'll be fighting for God, supposedly, and you'll go to heaven, etc. That sounds like a pretty good prospect rather than literally hanging on the corner smoking hash all day, because that's the only thing that you think is available to you.
Earlier this week, the connection between the recent terror attacks in Europe and elsewhere and the arming of terror groups in Libya and Syria was laid out by Syria's permanent representative to the United Nations, Bashar al-Zafari, speaking at a press conference in Geneva after a session of peace talks.
The Syrian Arab Republic condemns in the strongest terms the terrorist attacks that took place yesterday in the capital of Belgium, Brussels, and we express our condolences and sympathy to the victims, to the families of the victims. These terrorist explosions in Brussels and others that took place in Paris and other places in the world reaffirm once again that terrorism knows no boundaries. These attacks come as a sure result of all the wrong policies being taken vis-a-vis terrorism in order to implement particular agendas, and they come as a sure result of the legitimization by some of terrorism by calling them moderate. These, in fact, are but branches of the Wahhabi Takfiri ideology, which is the source of all terrorism. Syria, for the past 5 years, has been facing this terrorism and calls once again for a consolidation of all efforts to combat, all international efforts to combat terrorism, and to put a stop to the sponsors of terrorism and to make them stop their support to terrorist groups in order to achieve stability and peace in the region. And I would like to refer in this context that some of the terrorists that perpetrated the attacks in Brussels yesterday were fighting and killing Syrians in Syria before they went back to their capital, Brussels. The same applies to the attacks in Paris. Some of the Paris attackers were fighting and killing in Syria before going back to Paris. In all cases, this matter, I mean the fight against terrorism, is very clear internationally and amongst the Security Council groups on terrorism. Today, there are reports from these mentioned subcommittees of the Security Council on Terrorism that refer to the fact that there are tens of thousands of terrorist mercenary fighters killing in Syria and destroying its infrastructure. And some in the world do not feel ashamed when, be it in Europe, Turkey, or other countries, refer to those terrorists as a moderate Syrian opposition.
The Syrian conflict has not only brought terrorist attacks to Europe and Africa, it also produced a Cuban Missile Crisis moment of tension with the downing of a Russian plane by NATO member Turkey. For more, we spoke with Syrian-American activist Johnny Ashi, who lives in Los Angeles, via Skype Tuesday. Syria has been an interesting case, horror for the Syrian people and for a lot of people in the area, and that impacts almost globally, with some big power
geopolitics playing out there, both with the introduction of the armed groups of terrorist gangs that have been conducting a war against the country for 5 years, and also with the entry of Russia, the shoot down by a NATO member of a Russian plane, all kinds of scary moments. And now they're at the peace table. There's still many contradictions, but humanitarian aid is getting to some folks, and there seems to be some stability to the situation, at least from the point of view of the government.
Absolutely. And more power to the people, to be honest with you. I think this is probably one war that I would say the people of Syria helped with the peace-loving people around the world were able to actually win over the world bankers and over the world superpowers. Glad to see people are on a peace table, not back behind bunkers. Could have gone the other way easily. The West, led by the United States, wanted to see it going the other way. Many attempts from early on in the conflict was heading that route. We started with the humanitarian crisis, where they created mass exodus, fake mass exodus toward Turkey. Early on, before the crisis even started, those tents were built up in the borders with Turkey. They were trying, of course, to do a no-fly zone like they did with Libya. That didn't fly. They went to the massacres. They started committing those massacres and blaming the Syrian government for it. You know, we've had sanctions, embassies closed down, you know, especially after the Hula massacre, something that the Syrian government or the Syrian people had no clue what was going on. Of course, after investigation by independent reporters that went in, was obviously all the make of the same type of people that United States was insisting that they didn't exist in Syria. From day one, the United States and the West insisted there was no terrorist groups, that there was no arms, that this is the Syrian government committing crime and genocide against its people, something the Syrian people never believed because we lived it, we were living there. So that second pretext to war with the crimes, luckily with the help of Russia and China at the time, we avoided an all-out war against Syria. And of course, August 2013, after the another pretext, the sarin attack, and I'm sure you know well about it. I was in Damascus at the time visiting, and it was all played out. Another great pretext for war, as the Syrian government was waiting on the UN inspectors to come and inspect another attack that happened 4 months earlier that the Syrian government have complained to the United Nations that the rebel forces or the terrorist groups have used sarin against civilians in a town near Aleppo. Finally, we got the teams to come in 4 months later after Cara del Ponte, an independent team from the UN, already conducted a preliminary investigation, found out that it was the rebels, not the Syrian government, who have used that primitive type of sarin chemical bombs. The team arrives to Damascus on August 20th, only to hear that August 21st, the same Syrian government who brought in this team now decided to carry out another sarin gas against its own people 5 miles away from where the government lives. It's just another pretext that almost actually went up in flame. And then luckily we were in Syria and the whole world got involved. And I want to give big thanks to the American people. I think this is the first time they go into action for many, many years before we started the page book. I was on TV. Everybody, every activist got on Facebook, and over 4 million emails and phone calls hit all those all the senators and congressmen that were not sure which way to vote. And we tilted this to a point where obviously they decided not to vote and not to go to war. So it's one pretext after another after another. Of course, now they go to the final and best pretext, which we know that Bush used it in Iraq, which is pretext of world war on terror. It worked for Bush, and Obama thought, let's do it the same way, created this monster ISIS. We know ISIS has been around from day one, almost in different names, Al-Qaeda in Iraq or Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafists, which you probably know, and now the American public should know because the report has been declassified where it was actually classified, that the intelligence reports since back in 2012 had indicated, and this report was actually passed around from the SCIA, to the FBI, to the White House. So everyone looked at this report that all forces fighting against the Assad regime and against the Syrian army were extremists, were Salafist background, were Muslim Brotherhood, were Al-Qaeda in Iraq. That there was no peace-loving, moderate people fighting or killing in Syria, that they were all, and that was going to lead to Islamic State in the eastern part of Syria. That report was available in 2012. The United States knew about it and let it happen because they felt this is the only way they're going to get rid of the Assad regime. So it all comes down to a regime change. So now that last pretext, a war on terror, we saw the United States and its allies carry out what they call the coalition against ISIS, 15 months of nonsense bombing, 15 months of we don't know what the hell the United States is doing. All we know is that the ISIS is growing its territory in Syria and the Syrian army is losing ground. 15 months, Obama's talking about it's going to take 5 years and 10 years and hundreds and billions of dollars. Something I don't understand why 100,000 guys running around in the desert, we cannot get rid of them. Until, of course, August 30th when, or September 30th, September 2015, yeah, when the Syrian government asked the Russian for help. It was not an intervention like the Americans did, a coalition that was without the permission of the Syrian forces. It was actually this time, one was not intervention, it was a participation by the Syrian, by the Russian, based on a Syrian request. And sure enough, Russia showed the world that you really want to fight these people, I'll show you how to fight them. With the Syrian army on the ground, and I want to give credit to the Syrian army because bombing from the air, yes, it helped, but the major gains were done by the Syrian forces and the government forces. And they took back some of these towns. They freed some of these people that have been under this horrible rules for the last year or two or three. And then we're moving forward. Hopefully that tilt in the balance made the United States feel that it was already been caught up and this toxic contradictions, which trying to, you know, the scheme of changing regime is done. Finally, I think the United States government has realized, and the bankers, the World Bankers have realized, it's time to, you know, realize that we bet against the wrong guy. We better take our losses and run. Now it's time to end this. And hopefully, you know, there's serious efforts to end this crisis in Syria and we can have peace again.
The Syrian talks in Geneva have brought a number of benefits already. First and foremost, in terms of the ability to more freely deliver much-needed aid to areas that had been under siege. It has also allowed the UN chemical weapons inspectors to get back to work, as this month's Security Council President, Ambassador Ismael Gaspar Martins of Angola, told the press at a briefing at UN headquarters in New York Wednesday.
Finally, with the political process in Syria also evolving, that has rendered also possible for the mechanism to perform its task and with the concrete you know, results. So we feel that the ceasefire, which is still in place, and the political negotiations also evolving towards a more acceptable situation when it comes to the creation of a government of national unity. It is creating space, political space, for the work of the chemical weapons file to also be evolving towards a more positive position.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin spoke Thursday at a plenary session of the Russian Union of Industrialists and Entrepreneurs in Moscow. The meeting agenda included a discussion about modes of cooperation between the government and business, access to credit for the economy's real estate sector, and an anti-crisis program in general, including import replacement policies. The discussion at the conference provided an interesting look into how Russia sees itself in a world economy after the U.S. imposed sanctions 2 years ago.
It's only fourth place. Yes. Yeah, we are talking about decreasing of fiscal tax. First of all, it's administration load, decreasing of key rate, but I'm sure that together with the colleagues you talked about it, and we are going to talk about it. Alexander Nikolaevich in his speech pointed to the topics which you have discussed. In my speech, I'm going to draw attention, your attention, in this or that format, with a lot of representatives here. We meet on a regular basis, and this is all the time in the agenda. There are questions which require more attention. My colleagues will talk about it today. The format of meetings with RSPP and other business communities will be supported. We consider business and entrepreneurial communities are natural partners of power of off level to build competitive economy of a well-being country. RSPP turned 25 years this year. Business and society have gone through a very difficult period of market relationship building. There appeared trust to entrepreneurship there. Labor and values of economic freedom, market freedom. There are good figures from the point of view, attitude of the society to the to business, and the dynamic is very positive. Russian business has become more responsible and mature. There are more Russian companies who are working on a transparent basis, or they are responsible before state, and they are paying taxes. Entrepreneurship and the revenue managed to build a very good interaction based on trust and cooperation. They proved a risk-oriented approach. They use information technologies in their work, and to work in white, as we say in Russian, and reputation of a law-abated entrepreneurship is becoming a standard. Business has become a very good partner of the state to perfect, to train professionals. We have been talking about it a lot. Our companies create their own education centers, to invest to modernization of colleges. And they've been working a lot in higher institutions. They also held special competitions, not only on the national level, but inside the companies. Such contests allow us to evaluate the level of qualification and to orient on modern standards. I would ask to more actively to get to prepare our team World Skills, which will take place in Kazan in 2019. And I will add that we are continuing developing professional standards. With your participation, we form a system of independent system of evaluation of skills. By the way, they are discussing it in government session today. The Russian business is working on economic agenda and improving business climate. We are working on this together. RSPP suggests marks to the legislation to improve the jurisdiction. RSPP and the government, as a result of their work, they have accepted several laws on jurisdiction and court. Business community should participate more actively in this sphere. What is more, in work inside international organizations and promotion of Russian interest in B20. In this year, B20 will be in St. Petersburg Economic Forum. We are going to hold it together with Chinese partners who are in the chair this year. And during the meeting with Alexander Shokin, we agreed to form workforce task force. Alexander Nikolaevich remembered about it, but today, yesterday you saw it in mass media together with business communities. We had the first meeting. The issues which we were discussing are well known. This is widening of economic breaking the law. Second is increasing of limit. This issue has been raised by your colleagues in one of our meetings. If I'm not mistaken, that was the Russian support. The third is a widening of allowing to lawyer to the one who is under arrest. But the representative of the procurator said that it should be talked about not only entrepreneurs, but all the people from that point of view. The fourth is
предметов вещественных доказательств вещественными доказательствами по уголовному делу и возврата предметов,
returning the subjects which are not recognized to the
пороговых значений нанесённого ущерба,
then differentiation of
в зависимости от того,
depending on who did breaking of the law. It would be optimal that deputies of the State Duma introduced certain marks to the legislation before the end of the spring session. But the colleagues were assigned to develop these issues together with the deputy corpus. One more time, the objective to create a comfort environment for all good interpreters and defend rights, property rights, and make the law unfair to all who do well in business. It should define our fiscal policy and tax policy upon the whole. We introduced a monetary until 2018. It's obvious that entrepreneurs should have a long-term horizon for planning their actions and additional means for development. If the Minister of Finance thinks that we can talk about decreasing of fiscal tax, then the government should determine which should be taken away from what the government should do. So what can we reduce their pensions, payments, expenses on safety, military safety, what can we do? We understand that problems are not solved very easily, but we have to think about it. I think I want you to hear the following thought. In spite of the budget limits, they are all the time in the period of high low oil prices and low prices. It's inevitable. But I want you to know that we keep thinking about how to decrease fiscal load. This is true. To achieve this solution, it's hard, but we keep talking about it and discussing it. You know that in the president to the federal meeting, there was an assignment on the Minister of Reform to propose double functions of certain bodies. Alexander Nikolaevich gave a speech and he talked about this problem in his speech. It hasn't been solved. If you have any wishes and thoughts, that would be, we will be very thankful to you. RSPP participated in custom codes of Eurasia Union. I would like to hear which problems and issues you faced, Russian companies faced. Thank you very much for your attention.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.